happening now. We want to welcome our viewers from across the United States and around the world. This is the EdTech Situation Room. Good morning, good day, good evening. This is EdTech Situation Room, episode number 309 on November 8th, 2023. My name is Jason Neifer, and I am the executive director of the Montana Digital Academy, which is the state virtual school located on the beautiful University of Montana campus right here in kind of fallish, winterish Missoula, Montana. And joining me tonight, as always, good evening, Dr. Wes Fryer. How are you tonight, sir?
I am doing great, and I am glad to be with you. I think my dad is joining us from Kansas. I'm joining you from the ISS today. I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I am a middle school STEM teacher, having a great time teaching coding, web design, and media literacy this year. And we have some beautiful fall weather. It's actually, it got a little cold last week, but now I think it was in the low 70s today. It's just gorgeous, and all the leaves have dropped.
You have great weather there.
Oh, wow. I mean, it is, it's pretty phenomenal. And I think this is maybe unseasonably warm, actually, for November. But I should say the leaves have begun to fall, because as my, 85-year-old neighbor is counseling me, you need to wait for the right time, because otherwise you end up doing it multiple times. So fortunately, he has excellent and powerful electric blowers that he let me borrow last year, and we're going to probably work a little bit over Thanksgiving break. But we actually have parent, what are called student-led conferences, parent conferences, the next few days, and then we have Monday off for Diwali. And so we're conferencing for a couple days, and then we're at school for 4 more days, and then we're out for Thanksgiving break. So we're basically going to blink and the semester is going to be over. But do you see snow in the mountains from where you are in Missoula at this point?
Because
I was in Denver last weekend, and they had a beautiful dusting of snow on the mountains.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of mountains the last 72 hours. I was on the road to literally the center of Montana. There's a town called Lewistown that happens to contain the geographic center of our state. And so that was in and out of the Rocky Mountains. And yeah, I did see some dusting of snow on the mountain peaks. And so we won't probably see super snow until, January, February. That's kind of our time frame now for that. It'll just sprinkle snow here and there, and there might even be a true storm at some point. We typically get white we tend to get a white Christmas, at least usually 2 out of 3 years for sure. But the snow is definitely headed in our direction, and it's not my favorite season. My favorite season is spring. My second favorite season is fall. My third favorite season is winter, and my fourth favorite season is summer. But all four are really beautiful here in beautiful Montana. So
that is awesome. That is great. Well, thank you for putting a lot of links in. I just put a couple and then went back to the doc and said, oh my goodness, look at this. And so, sign of the times, ladies and gentlemen, I would think that a good 75 to 80% are AI. And we have a new subcategory for AI called Jason AI Experimentation and Wes AI Experimentation. So Dr. Neifer, besides reflecting on our weather patterns in Montana and North Carolina, what is this going to be for our two live viewers? And if you can say hi, feel free to do so and drop in and ask questions.
Well, we are certainly going to take or keep an eye on AI, but also this week we've got some social media news. There's some security news. Apple released some stuff last week, and even though it was pretty cool stuff, didn't get a ton of press, although I see reviews are now out on the new M3s. I have a couple of Microsoft pieces of news to share, and then we'll end our podcast this week with our Geeks of the Week, which tends to be our nerdy look at interesting things that we have spotted that may or may not be ed tech related. So, Dr. Fryer, usually as of late, we've done one of two things. Either we've jumped into AI first or we've jumped into other first. What would you prefer this week?
Let's do Apple. I actually just dropped in a link that is a pretty cool video. Did you realize they shot the entire Apple event on an iPhone?
They did.
Well, I mean, they haven't been able to do that really because of, I guess, just bandwidth and everything. But the new, is it a 17 or 18? I should know this. Hey, Betsy's live with us.
iOS 17?
Is it? Okay, but what's that? What's the actual iPhone?
Oh, the iPhone is a 16. No, it's a 15.
A 15. Okay. Is that a sign of the times or what?
One old man talking to another old man about the numbers of iPhones.
Everybody. I'm gonna wake up.
You're back in iPhone 3.
Me with the iPhone 4. So I dropped the link in. It's behind the scenes, an Apple event shot on iPhone, and it's 2 minutes. I use that as a Wonderlink for my kids, which actually we always talk about. What was the who's the audience? What's the purpose? This was, you know, meant to showcase the iPhone, but you can plug a USB-C cable directly into the iPhone, not only for charging but also for data transfer. So yes, while that very amazing video sequence in the beginning was shot on an iPhone, I mean, they hooked it up to like millions of dollars worth of equipment and a fancy drone and all this stuff, but they were able to directly transfer over the cable. And so anyway, we've said this over and over again for every Apple event. Check out, if nothing else, the beginning, because they always do amazing things. So were you inspired by the spooky event? It was on October 30th, I guess, the day before Thanksgiving. So I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched a bit of it. And I could just, you know, push a button to play my recording. Hey, it's great. There's new stuff. It means the old, you know, the old stuff will be cheaper. But anyway, beyond that, what else are your thoughts?
Well, so there was a lot of speculation about what was coming in this event. And the fact that that the M3 chip, so that's the third generation computer processor that Apple's released under the Apple Silicon family, really got relegated to a secondary event this fall, right? It seemed like that the phones were the big event, and then this is additional pieces here, I think is super interesting. You know, as with every single Apple event, there are people that, you know, are irrationally exuberant about it, and there are people that are rationally critical of the event. So there's all of that that's been going on. But my understanding is that the M3 chip is pretty great, and that there are several interesting updates going on here. But certainly there is three new M3 chips, the M3, the M3 Pro, and the M3 Max. The iMac has been updated with an M3. That's the 24-inch iMac that comes in kind of the super bright colors. I'm probably done with iMacs from the standpoint of I've been so happy with even like super cheap Mac Minis that it doesn't really matter to me anymore. In fact, I'm using a Mac Mini at home now as my primary machine. I use a Mac Mini at work as my primary machine. The only update, I didn't even pick up larger drives because I use so much cloud storage. I just have the one update that I do give myself is up to 16 gigs of RAM. And these were both under $1,000 to pick up, even with AppleCare attached. But the iMac has been upgraded. I have seen some references to, I didn't stick an article in, that Apple has no plans to create a 27-inch version of the iMac with the or the Apple Silicon processor. So that would certainly diminish my interest in the iMac. I do like at least one large screen to be part of my process. They also have a series of new MacBook Pros that were released, utilizing these new chips, which look like they're pretty solid. I've only seen a couple of reviews, about these new iMacs, and there's a couple things that are for sure. The first one is that they have bid farewell to the Touch Bar. That's finally, no longer available in any of the Macs. To be honest, I'm happy with that. I don't like the Touch Bar. I've never liked the Touch Bar. And it's funny because my friend Mike that I work with at the Digital Academy says that he's really surprised that that hasn't been a thing for me, because there's a lot of cool hacky things you can do with the Touch Bar. But I just it's just never been a part of my use of the Mac platform. And then there are additional 14 and 16 inch MacBook Pros that are now available. And my understanding is that even the basic Mac that only has 8 gigs of RAM, MacBook Pro M3 that has just 8 gigs of RAM, it's super fast. So apparently the third generation of these chips continues Apple's race to not necessarily double down, but give a significant performance increase with every generation of the new Mac processors. So,
couple thoughts. The Verge article that you put in has the Apple scary fast event in 10 minutes. I wonder how long it'll be before the AI tools are going to be so good as to be able to auto-generate those.
Yep.
You know, a thought that I have today that I didn't have a while back about speed, you know, I've said, oh my gosh, the M1's so fast, you'd never need anything else unless you're just like a high-end video developer. But if you do any kind of local stuff with generative AI, like downloading Stable Diffusion, that's a very processor intensive thing. You know, it is video related. So I guess it may be anything that relates to video and video processing. Of course, I guess if you're mining Bitcoin too, maybe, but you know, I'll be eager to go to the Apple store and give these a spin. My wife has the M1 that we have. I still don't have admin rights to my own box at school. And as I'm wanting to do more things with Python and GitHub and stuff like that, I'm contemplating my options. But, again, I think for most users, you know, the absolute bleeding edge is going to be a bit overkill. So check Swappa and, check other places, and you can now, you know, pick up an M1 or an M2 for a lot less. And it's going to be an incredibly fast machine that's going to have great return on investment.
Yeah. And I would also, note, there's a great video that I'll throw here in chat. I really like the Luke Miani channel on YouTube. He's a guy that is kind of super deep in the Apple world, and he released a video the other day I'm going to throw the video in chat. That's the audio of the video. I hope we don't get a strike for that. But
we didn't hear it.
Okay, good. He released a video a couple of days ago called "The Perfect Budget Apple Ecosystem Doesn't It?" And then he is now talking about the perfect budget Apple ecosystem. And one of the points he makes is that if you're really careful about it, you can pick up a MacBook Air M1 used now for well under $600. And in fact, when I purchased mine, this was a year ago, and it's been really my daily driver. I still like, I think the Chrome OS is advancing so quickly that it's a pleasure to be on the Chrome OS, but between coupons and a couple, Amazon cards that I picked up from doing surveys and stuff, that I was able to get mine for well under $500 brand new a year ago because I waited for sales and used some Amazon cards that have been given to me. But he's able to put together a really impressive used Apple collection that includes the iPhone 11 Pro, which he says apparently is still the battery champ, that they haven't had a bit of a battery since the iPhone 11 Pro. He utilizes the M1 MacBook Air, the 8 GB M1 MacBook Air, the 2018 or 19 iPad Pro 11, which is available now for $300 to $400.
What's the name of this creator? Luke
Miani. And I'll put this video here in the document so we can post it. But this is a really good video.
Excuse me.
That where he buys an Apple ecosystem, a cheap Apple ecosystem for $2,000, and that includes an Apple Watch, the M1 MacBook Air, the iPad Pro 11 something or another, and then also an Apple Watch. I think it's a 6 that he picks up, and he's able to create a wonderful Apple experience that he said that at first when he was doing the video, he went for the absolute cheapest and was able to get price out something for $1,300, but for just a couple hundred dollars more, he picked up an ecosystem that he said is really amazing and useful. And that is the exciting thing about the release of these new PCs is that now Apple M1s will go down in price in the used market. And if you use a clever place like Swappa, or you're very thoughtful about how you may go around eBay, then you might be able to pick up one of these M1 MacBook Airs. And even though it's only got 8 gigs of RAM, it's the perfect daily driver for me.
Okay, I think we need to do a show where you and I just do YouTube channel recommendations and podcast recommendations, seriously, yeah. Because one of our new department colleagues and I are now getting together weekly to share some stuff. And some of it's just like, hey, what are you listening to with a podcast? Because it's just fantastic to be able to find a new channel to follow, a new podcast to subscribe to or whatever. So I'd not heard of Luke Miani, and that's awesome. Yeah, the perfect budget Apple ecosystem.
Yep, there you go.
All right, very good. Let's do a couple more others, and then we'll get into the AI. And I apologize for the sneezes, folks. I will try to mute my mic faster next time. Man, I'm going to have to go run and get a Kleenex.
Let me talk about some Microsoft stuff.
Yeah, talk about the Microsoft
stuff. Care about.
I'm going to talk about Microsoft
for a little while.
I'm going to be right back.
So there are two things that I want to highlight in the Microsoft world. And I have to say that I only stay in Microsoft stuff because, I have colleagues that are into it, but also most of my family, is Microsoft based. So I am family IT guy. And that means that, I like to keep up with this, but, there are two interesting things that are happening right now. The first one is that Windows 11, their second half 2023 update is now out. And I did update, I was able to find a couple of months ago an incredibly dirt cheap, this is a Lenovo T480 for a song. And so this is my go-to play around with Windows laptop. So, and it has a really solid, I think it's got an i7 processor in there, an 8th generation i7 processor.
I'm laughing, ladies and gentlemen, because if you knew how many CPUs there are in the Knifer home, I mean, yeah. This is probably, at least in the state of Montana, if not the Pacific Northwest, a Guinness record.
I would show you a picture of my, my laptop box there, I should say tote that's next to me where I store my laptops, but it would just be embarrassing. So, and I will say I never buy any of this stuff new that, with the exception of Mac stuff and occasionally a Chromebook, all the stuff I get is good and used. But so I did update to the Windows 11, half update, and they do have, the generative AI tools built directly into the operating system now. I think it's going to be better over time because
they have OpenAI built into the OS. Is that what you said?
Well, yeah. Well, the Bing's version of OpenAI, but yeah, there's now a box you can click on in the toolbox.
And not a browser link?
Say it again.
Does it just go to the browser to be able to?
No, it's the best way to describe it is that, I mean, it is basically a browser window, but it's not. It's something you can literally pop up and it's called preview right now. And it literally opens up, the preview of Microsoft Copilot, in the kind of the right fourth of the screen. And so it's basically the same thing you can get on the browser, but it's Bing Chat kind of built into the operating system.
And I wonder if they give priority. One of the things some of my web design kids figured out is instead of using Chrome, when you use the Edge browser, you mm-hmm. get more credits or whatever. Bing AI is better when you log in with a Microsoft account, and it's better with Edge than it is with Chrome. And so that might be an article to look for, because perhaps it's even better when you run the native app in Windows 11.
Yep, absolutely. And so here is I'm reverse on my screen, but here is this, you know, the right fourth of the screen has the Bing chat built right into it, including the ability to upload images and chat back and forth with the bot. And I am really curious about this kind of baked right into the operating system versions of AI. Obviously, we talked about a couple weeks back, that's the Chromebook Plus model, you know, for higher end Chromebooks. There's now, generative AI built directly into the operating system. And I would imagine that's what Apple's working on too, in the background, is not going out to third party models, but, you know, they can license OpenAI, for example, to bake right into a Mac OS and iOS. I'm sure that's got to be part of this process, but it's pretty good. You know, I still think that the unaltered version of ChatGPT is better than what Bing will do for you. The Bing one feels a little overweight, is the way I would describe it, because there seems to be a lot of stuff or cruft built on top of it, which, you know, to be honest, is kind of the Microsoft model. So it's not surprising that that's where it's gone, but I do like that it's built directly into the operating system. And then I would also note, this is an article, both these articles are from Thurrott.com. Paul Thurrott is really the top journalist, I think, in Microsoft stuff. But Paul Thurrott also reports on November 1st that if you want to get Microsoft Copilot, which is the kind of business version of their AI generative tools, it's now available, but you have to have, I think, a minimum of 100 users to be able to do it. And it's going to cost you $30 a month, $36 a month, to get access to that. So that's a pretty darn expensive, premium to get access to those things. And it will plug directly into things like Outlook and Teams. And so that's certainly an interesting piece of that too. But I am looking forward to, and I can't imagine that I get access to Microsoft tools. I have a personal account, but I also have an account via my work at the University of Montana. I can't imagine they're going to pay $30 a user for the thousands of users that they serve across the university. But I'm interested in seeing where this goes in the education tenants, and I do think it's a worthy project, right? That they're kind of baking these AI tools directly into the operating systems and also to the office suites.
Yes, absolutely. My camera is just doing weird stuff tonight. I apologize. I have been noticing, like this morning, there was some overload with ChatGPT. It was not given full images. And then I was helping somebody learn about Claude AI today and similar kind of things with overload. There is a ton of processing that is going on with these tools. And the more capable that they become with respect to, you know, being able to generate images and, you know, everything that they're doing, it's just more and more power that they're drawing. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens in terms of the, you know, ROI and the financial side. I mean, I think $30 a month per user is kind of steep. And so it'll be interesting to see what OpenAI and these other tools do as well. I used Bard. I have a story about that to share. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. And seeing how the performance of these tools and the capabilities of these tools are changing dynamically, you know, it's pretty fascinating. So I think it's good that there's competition. And I think it's pretty interesting that how Microsoft is, you know, trying to incentivize. They've made a huge investment in OpenAI. And so they're trying to incentivize the use of Bing, the use of their operating system. It's not entirely true that I don't care at all about Microsoft Windows, because my web design class teaching. No, it's all right. That might have been true in the past. Is in a very tricked out gaming lab that is just I have to get the specs to just impress you, but it is definitely the most tricked out, incredibly ridiculously fast. You know, we're doing web design on Google sites mainly, so we don't need all the capability. So I'm doing that on, you know, a daily basis is teaching in there. A question I have, and maybe you know this for Windows 11, unless, and not going to Screencastify or Loom or something like that, are there some built-in screencasting capabilities on Windows 11? Like the snipping tool and being able to like snip screenshots, and and print screen. I'm very, very low literacy in terms of my media creation on Windows, because it's been quite a while since I've had one myself. But what about screencasting?
Yeah, I think you can screencast natively in Windows 11. Record screen, video, Windows 11. I'm, of course, doing a Bing search to help you out there. I'm Dr. Fryer, but it looks like, and of course, now my alarms are going off. We've got, between the two of us tonight, we're really on top of our game, aren't we?
The dogs are, yeah, they were just going off here a minute ago, so.
This podcast still doesn't have a sponsor, folks. So if you know a corporate entity that would love to you know, record a couple of guys talking or host a couple of guys talking
with alarms, dogs, and blurry video.
Right, right. And my blood sugar's crashing, so I'm eating. Like, it's just really a whole.
And for the record, night. Those are Scooby snacks, are they not?
They are legitimately Scooby snacks.
He was called out, ladies and gentlemen, but it's all right. Yep. I've never had those. Are they good?
they're basically graham crackers with cinnamon on them. So okay. Pretty great.
Yeah. There you go.
And they do give off the vibe of being actual dog treats, but still, you know, you do what you got to do. So, okay. I'm apparently a ginormous kid. Yes, the snipping tool apparently allows you to record, to screen record. So it that's does. The Windows snipping tool in Windows 11.
Okay. Perfect. Why don't we do the social media and security quick, and then we can jump over to the AI.
Sounds great.
Okay. So this is, I've never heard of this before, 404 Media. This was on October 28th. The title of this is Elon Musk Broke All the Tools Historians Need to Archive Tweets About the Israel-Gaza War. You know, we've been talking for quite a while about the dumpster fire, which is Twitter. And oh, yeah. And thanks, Betsy, saying Windows Shift S snips. I knew that there were all kinds of things that Elon had done with respect to reducing the number of folks on the teams that were doing content moderation and the way that was handling it. But in the past, because of the API access, which was allowed, you had all kinds of tweets being archived. And that was really helpful when you were trying to verify things, or, you know, something is taken down. So it's unfortunate that the elimination of those API tools has really crippled. I think it was Paula PolitiTweet, monitored and archived the accounts of 1,536 politicians, public figures, and journalists in an automated way. And it goes into some details about, you know, politicians that sometimes posted something and then took it down, and et cetera. So anyway, those things are basically hurting the ability of fact checkers to be able to verify, and just journalists, I think, to be able to do their jobs. I think Twitter still continues to be an important platform, and it's one that I haven't abandoned, but it certainly has less utility because of that. Any thoughts there?
I mean, if you want the platform to be a legitimate platform, right, then this is exactly the kind of stuff that you need to be mindful of, right? I agree. I think Twitter is an important historical record, right? Like all social media sites, Facebook is a historical record, Instagram is a historical record. And not just for, you know, big things like the war, but also for ourselves, right? If I suddenly become, you know, super famous, not infamous, hopefully, but famous for something, right? The historical record of my pre-fame, would be incredibly important, right? Like in the same way that, you know, politicians sometimes have to scrub their Twitter accounts when they get elected to something.
Or athletes, or, you know, all kinds of folks. Yeah. Because it's like, oh my gosh, look what they did here.
And, you know, and say what you want about any of the social media pieces, is it does give a pretty incredible microphone to anyone that wants it. And especially for, I'm glad you mentioned athletes, because that's so true, right? That there are sometimes, you know, young athletes that, you know, were, you know, NCAA, Division II athletes that, or I think that's called, something else now, Division III athletes that end up in a professional sport, or they're an Olympian, or something amazing happens to them. And, you know, that what they say suddenly matters. And that those are things that are important for the historical record. And I think that's something that Mr. Musk needs to be very thoughtful about, because if we don't, I mean, if we're stuck getting screenshots for all these for the rest of time, I just think that this platform matters less and less. And what I just don't understand is that I feel like that he was handed a pretty viable platform that people were annoyed by, but not annoyed enough to leave, right? Like, it wasn't toxic enough for most folks that they were getting more value out of it. But I don't spend any time on Twitter anymore. And in fact, it's not like I'm going anywhere. Instagram and LinkedIn are my primary tools now for social media. I don't post all that much on either. I'm mostly a consumer in those cases, but I'm happy with that. Facebook is still great on Mother's Day, Father's Day, and your birthday. And occasionally when you need to share new family news, it's a great piece. But yeah, it's just sad watching this company slowly shrivel to nothing.
Yeah. Well, one more article and then we can do AI. This is an AirTag article. And I know, Jason, that you are a big AirTag fan and user. And this is rather remarkable. So this is from Ars Technica today on November 8th. And the headline is AirTags are the new go-to tool for cops after spike in car thefts. And so this is, it says that there are, a TikTok car theft trend has led cops to give out free AirTags. And so the Metropolitan Police Department Washington, D.C.? In D.C. has rolled out a pilot program this week doling out free AirTags to residents where the police are seeing the greatest increase in vehicle theft. And the quotation from Pamela Smith, MPD's acting chief of police, is, "Our goal is not to just prevent carjackings and motor thefts, but also to ensure swift law enforcement action when these incidents occur. These tracking devices allow our officers and detectives to be better positioned to quickly locate stolen vehicles, recover property, and gather vital evidence for investigations." And I would doubt that this was a intended use case that Apple had for AirTags when they released these to consumers. But we've talked about how wonderful it is to have them in your luggage when you're traveling. There have actually been some cases of some international airlines, some non-US airlines, like trying to ban them because they're like electronic devices. And what they've really done is embarrass the companies in terms of their poor luggage handling. But I think this sounds fantastic. I think Apple's continuing to respect privacy. And so, when you're doing this, you're connecting it to your iPhone. And I think there might be some way that then you hand that off to police. But, being able to get precise tracking of your vehicle and getting those folks caught, maybe hopefully this will cause a dent in that. Are you surprised by this, Dr. Neifer? I would expect you might just say, of course, I knew AirTags were awesome.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would say, is that they are super great. And, I would say that since I started traveling again, this would have been in 2022 is when I was traveling. I think that sounds about right. That they've been a critical part of my travel infrastructure, and they've helped me out three times now. In that one time my bag was delivered to the wrong airline desk. At first when I kind of nudged, when I was looking for the bag, the person was kind of annoyed that I had that information or data. But after they found where the bag went, she said, "I'm so sorry for being snotty about that, but we would have never found this bag if it hadn't been for the AirTag." And she said, and we see the error now, but that the rate they have to handle bags, I understand things get lost really easily, but in this case, it ended up in a desk that it would have taken days, if not a lot more, for me to get that bag. And then, and similar things have happened to me twice, where I saw a bag was left behind once, and I was able to talk to the airline the second I got on the ground because I knew where it was at. I didn't have to go wait around for it at the baggage claim before, talking to someone about it. I was able to go directly to the desk, and they said, "Yep, you're correct. It's still sitting in Seattle, and we'll get it on the next flight out." And they delivered it to me that night. Just the time savings of it's pretty extraordinary. There's still a creepy factor to it for sure, although I think Apple's been working on that. And also, we hear a lot less about the creepy news with this as of late. But, I have about seven or eight of them now. I have them sitting in everything to me that's important. It lets me know if I forget something or leave something behind and where that item is at. And I think it's a pretty extraordinary technology that I wholeheartedly support.
Fantastic. Okay, well, here we are 34 minutes into our show. I'm going to try to stop flipping around on my cameras. I do the Wi-Fi thing, and I don't know, it's pixelating, so not that anybody wants to see me anyway. What do you want to say about AI tonight, Dr. Neifer? There's only about 50 articles to choose from.
Yeah, AI continues to be a hot topic in the tech world, as it turns out. Well, I just want to start off here, and then we could jump into the articles. I presented now 25 times, I think, in the last calendar year on AI, and it doesn't make me an expert. It just makes me decently informed. And in fact, what I think has been really interesting about AI is that I don't think experts have been all that useful in this because of how trying the technology is of kind of our traditional education systems. And I had the opportunity the other day to look at a slide deck from a prominent person in the education reform space, and it was from June, so it wasn't recent, but it was from June, and the factual errors about AI in that particular slide presentation, but also the same hackneyed things that individual has been saying for 25 years. Oh, this will, if you just do this, it'll fix AI. And I think we're waiting we're waiting for someone to come in and deal with this issue, like someone to tell us what to do. But I think this technology moves too quickly to wait around for some expert to tell us what to do. And I also think that no one can tell you how powerful AI is better than you just playing with it yourself, that I think you really need to kind of wrap your brain around it by playing with it. And my recommendation is 30 minutes a week would probably be enough to give you at least a functional understanding of it. Otherwise, you're going to dismiss it as a not huge trend. And I just think that's a huge mistake.
I have wanted to get together with our middle school art teachers. We have two of them, just to play with the tools. And now that ChatGPT-4 has the DALL-E 3 integration, and I don't have to be in Midjourney, and it's incredible, right? The quality is absolutely stunning. I just talked with one of them yesterday, and so hopefully before Thanksgiving or at the early part of December, we're going to get together. I've also decided to go ahead and get an ed camp going here in our area. We've had them before. These tools are so powerful. And the more that you play with them, and I think I need to either independently or with you, right, playing with media, the AI edition, the more that I play with them, the more my brain, comes up with other ideas for things. Today, I needed to create a new lesson for my kids. And I, had a very good idea about what to do with that. I just dictated onto my phone the format of my Canvas assignments, which is goals, steps, turn in. And I said I wanted 3 to 4 goals, I wanted 5 to 7 steps, and I wanted the turn in. And then I just dictated in narrative form what the assignment was. Boom. It created it. And yes, I could have done that, but I mean, maybe it saved me 10 minutes, 15 minutes. What does that look like when you multiply that out, times all the weeks in the school year? And it's just absolutely stunning, the superpowers that this gives us. So agree.
And I would add something else to that too, that part of the complexity of this conversation is the complexity, right? Like it picks at so many things that are either directly involved with or adjacent to teaching and learning that it makes it very difficult, I think, to wrap your brain around it in a way that allows you the space to just explore with it, right? Like, I think it does, it shoots such a extraordinary shot across the bow of teaching and learning. And, so much so that I'm rethinking a lot of my strategies now and things that I held very dearly, because I think it is very impacted by the whole notion of generative AI. And so, if you don't like this, or if you think the technology is suspect, you may be right about that. I certainly wouldn't say, certainly wouldn't say no at this point to criticism, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't explore it, because soon enough, well, it's available now, just not in the standard school issue of Google, but you can ask Bard after you click a couple buttons to turn it on to tell you what's in today's email. And I just think about, and it's not very good yet, and it's monumentally better than it was 4 weeks ago, right? So, you know, that's kind of how it's working with all these tools. But, you know, I just imagine, you know, and I hear from teachers all the time that email has become such a toxic location, because, you know, in general, my rule is if someone emails you at 1 o'clock in the morning, that's an email you should probably ignore for a little while, because that tells you that something unpleasant is about to happen.
Or someone may not have good boundaries.
Yeah, exactly. Right. and so, you know, like if you have this interface that can sniff out your 22 emails overnight and dismiss most of them as spam, and then, you know, say that there is one from, you know, so-and-so's parent that, you should probably keep an eye on, you know, before you start class this morning. That's great. And, you know, I think that these tools could really make teaching a fair fight again. And that's what interests me about this, and making sure that we don't create an entire generation of soft brain kids because we just taught them to farm things out to AI, not the processes they need to teach and learn, and then start to integrate AI into the process of doing cool things with it, with, you know, your critically thinking brain.
So have you turned it on where your folks in your work domain can use Bard?
We have, yes.
Okay, because we don't, and it's just, I'm just doing it on the personal side. So I have a story about that. I think we should probably talk about Biden's executive order and statements. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? I think you put the article in there.
I did. Yeah. So, President Biden last week announced an executive order, and, you know, it's the official title of the executive order is Executive Order on Safe, Secure, and Trustworthy Artificial Intelligence. And what I would say is that it is full of a lot of platitudes, right? And executive orders typically go into a little more detail about things, but there is going to be some steps here they're going to take in order to try to nudge this ultimately in the right direction. And it includes things like dealing with discrimination on the platforms, provide guidance to folks so that they don't use AI to exacerbate discrimination in things like housing and in federal contracts, supporting workers that may be displaced due to AI, yada, yada, yada. And I will say that as much as I agree with some folks that maybe this is the wrong tool to really regulate AI, at least someone's taking a shot at this. You know, while we watch Congress fumble around with things, and this is not a shot at the current people in charge there. This is a shot at the whole crew, because it wasn't a partisan thing when, you know, you watch them fumble around tech in the last couple of years. But the bottom line is, I'm glad someone's doing something, even though this might not be my preferred method to go about this process.
One of the bolded bullet points in the White House press release is accelerate the rapid hiring of AI professionals. It just strikes me as, like, I don't think they're coming from our formal schools, because no. The lack of agility and flexibility in many schools to be able to embrace and, I guess, recognize the power of and embrace the potential for these tools.
Yep.
We're really slow to it. So there's lots of committees being formed. There's lots of hand wringing. There are bans that are going on, but I think that we really do need to consider the agility or lack of agility that we have as organizations to respond to a new environment and to changing situations. And so, I'm like with you. I'm glad this is being done. My perception is this is being done out of frustration that Congress seems unable to regulate tech at all in any, you know, meaningful way. But I don't know that this is ultimately going to make a huge difference in anything other than, you know, encouraging, but maybe the hiring, but Yeah, it's just it does seem to be words in the right direction, but not necessarily actions that are going to change a whole lot.
Yep, couldn't agree more.
Okay, what else you put in the lion's share of articles? I have a couple.
Yeah, so let's. These are some articles from last month that I want to talk about. These are steps that a couple of companies are trying to throw in some transparency components for AI. And so the first one is that Google has rolled out an about this image interface as part of its image search. And what it does is that it tries to compare it with other images in its search database so you can get a sense of how old the image is. And then also it tries to sniff around the metadata to figure out if it was either generated or enhanced by AI. And so, I think that that's a search lab. I think you have to turn that on. It's my understanding right now, but I think that's a good start, right? That, you know, Google has always been about trying to give you metadata on anything it's trying to sniff around. So the fact that they're working on that with images, I think is great. And I also think that, I keep thinking about it in terms of, you know, the mass proliferation of generated websites. So in other words, the copy for websites that are intended to be more spammy based rather than legitimate informational sources. And the problem is that stuff proliferates, whether we like it or not. And so if we have a means of, and I would hope all search engines adopt this to try to report to you more about the image, I think that's a really thoughtful step towards transparency in these models.
Have you been using some of the Bard, AI search results that you can now get at the top of your Google search? Yeah. I found that to be helpful. And interesting to see, you know, their implementation of that.
I will also note that AI's article summary is just built into Pixel phones. So because I'm that guy, I have a Pixel phone sitting around my house. And when the newest Android operating system was released this year, I think it's Android 14 is the newest. I think it was on 13.2, or at least it was in beta on 13.2, but on 14, you know, if you open up an article from its kind of list of top articles for you, it'll provide a generative AI summary at the bottom of the article just automatically. And I think that's pretty cool. And I just think that's something right now you can do with plugins, but I'm sure that across all these search engines that this will be a part of the future, is that it's not just giving you, you know, a summary from the metadata of the website, which can often be tweaked inappropriately, but instead it's going to read the article and kind of let you know what's in there before you have to dig in yourself.
Could you do the Canva AI Classroom Magic article?
Yeah, so Canva continues to really push AI tools into their platforms. And I will tell you, there's a lot of people that are, well, first I have to say, I love Canva. Canva is by far the best tool I've adopted in the past 10 years, without exception. It's really, really outstanding. And I'm not sure if I could do my job without Canva. And I have no need for any other graphic anything anymore because of this tool set. And I do, in addition to getting the free version for work, I pay for the pro version. And
so it's not free to you as an educator?
It is free to me as an educator, but for my professional stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a limitation in the license. So you're not supposed to be using anything for commercial purposes that you generate the EDU version.
Right.
So, and I have, you know, 7-8 years worth of stuff on there now. In fact, I go back sometimes and look at the really old stuff to kind of see how much the tool has progressed. But I will admit that even though they keep creating more and more AI tools, they don't feel quite as advanced as going directly to DALL-E 3 or ChatGPT or Claude or Midjourney. And now I've seen things that people say they generate on Canva, and it looks pretty good, right? So I think that I may just be misusing the tool, and I haven't had time to dig in. But they've announced all sorts of evolutions to their tools. So it can do things now, there's certainly Magic Write, which has always been there. That's the text generation tool. There's also Magic Animate that allows you to take still images and create animations with them. magic grab images, which allows you to pull pieces out of images, which I think is pretty swift. Magic grab text, which allows you to grab text that is not OCR'd already, which I think part of that's going to introduce a brand new tool or a brand new generation of tools of, accessibility features for things like websites so that it can read text for you, whether it's accessible or not, which is super great. They also, have added in new safety, and accessibility checks into it that are powered by AI. And they also allow more options for doing things like reformatting an image. So I have an image that's square. I want to make this into a Twitter post. Remake it for me with AI. And again, I my playing with it says it's not super powerful yet from my standpoint. But I think this is incredible. And the fact that they're doubling down on safety protocols means this may be the way to give students access to AI that's very thoughtfully created for students in an educational environment.
So shout out to you as well as Cindy Danner-Kuhn for continuing to evangelize Canva, because I finally jumped on the Mardi Gras float this year, and wow, is it fantastic. Both for my media literacy students as well as my web design students. This article has a very interesting graph about survey results for 1,000 teachers, how teachers feel. 93% of teachers, I'm trying to look for the date, doesn't have a date on it. 93% said, I'm not sure where to start with AI.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, they're trying to provide these tools to make this easier. I would agree with you that, I mean, like the Gamma, what is it? The Gamma.app. I think I did that as a Geek of the Week, which is that website generation. There's a few tools that definitely do things way beyond what I've seen just a ChatGPT, Bard or Claude do. But, this idea, here that they are, integrating the tools into the environment that teachers are already familiar with using, who are Canva users. They say they've got professional development courses. They've got cheat sheets on how to write prompts. That's great. I haven't taken advantage of that. And again, because of how dynamic this is, I've been paying like $20 a month for Khan Academy's Khanmigo. And yeah, I've dabbled with it a little bit. And the one webinar I got into was really not very accessible or motivating. And anyway, have you gotten your money's worth out of it? What have you done with Khanmigo?
You know, I haven't, but it's because I'm the wrong audience for it, right?
Right.
Like, that's the problem, is that I think it's pretty cool. And my understanding is that Khan Academy National and Sales has been working to roll out Khanmigo, and they want money for this, right? Like, that's one of the plays there that is interesting. They'll give it to you for free. But they prefer that you pay for it, which I did, because.
But isn't it more for like, if you got kids doing math and you're having them get tutoring through Khanmigo, is that the model in terms of like who the right educator for it is?
I think so. Because every time, like when I ask it to generate in my, I have about a half dozen or so history prompts that I use, across all these tools, so I can kind of compare the output. You know, if I ask it for an essay on the causes of World War I, it'll say things like, well, let's work through that together, which is great. I mean, that's exactly what I want it to do, but that's not that, in my mind, then, that's a tutoring platform. It's not an AI platform. And so,
but I think that's what Saul Khan's vision is for it, is to really try and leverage it as, quote, the ultimate tutor that's not going to give kids the answer. It's going to Socratically engage with them and, help them be able to arrive at the answer themselves, more independent thinking.
That's exactly right. And again, I'm glad the space is out there. And I also think that this gives, Saul Khan and his movement a better chance at longevity, because I think he's been frustrated that the Khan Academy resources haven't been the revolution that he thought they would be, based on his One Room Schoolhouse book. I think this is a better, because the content's everywhere now is the bottom line. I like their platform that they deliver it on, but content's everywhere. But I think using his power and resources to create a student friendly, you know, tutor chatbot is actually a perfect use for his time and resources.
Yeah. Okay. I think we had to talk about some AI experiments. But are there any other articles? There's so many other good ones. We didn't talk about Grok, this American Federation of Teachers partnering with ChatGPT Zero. Yeah. Boy, that seems like the wrong direction to go. Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. In fact, I know how that works now. So I've got the new, Sonoma installed on my Mac, and it's got these things called reactions. I think I can go like this and it will automatically create. Yeah, there we go. Automatically create a thumbs down graphic. Yeah. And now it's storming for some reason.
How did it do that?
I don't know. I just,
what?
Yeah, I can.
I saw the hearts appear a while back and I was like, what is going on? And
oh yeah, here we go. And here's a little.
Can you generate these when you're ready or just?
Well, you can do both, I think, but I just figured out that if you give it a double thumbs down or a thumbs down.
What are you clicking on?
Nothing. No hands. And then for some reason, when I kept it down, it started storming on me. So,
and then it rains. Okay.
Yeah. So ignoring that for a second, that's AI generated a little bit too. I will just say that I'm disappointed with the AFT because I feel like that they are generally a research-driven organization, and claiming that this is taking proactive steps to deal with AI, I think is utterly ridiculous. And so, I thought that was a terrible thing. And the marketing emails from those purveying these tools to check for AI generation, they're getting more desperate and angry sounding. And it's like, the demo offers I get are pretty extraordinary.
I think that's the wrong bandwagon to be on with EdTech and AI. Yeah.
Yeah. And someone needs to be working in the space, because if we can get a detector, I think that's useful. But all the science says right now that at least in the current medium to short term future, that they're just not going to work. So I'm glad we talked about that. I do want to talk about, let's keep that the AI fake nudes thing for next week, because that
is outrageous and
gross. But let me talk about one of my experiments. So if you go on TikTok or any of its rivals, if you are in education space, you're probably going to see some ads for AI tools that are aimed at students. And unfortunately, it's not aimed at helping students. The way they're usually advertised is, you know, finally you have time to do your homework and have a social life, or finally you're able to maintain your job and still turn all your homework in. And one of those tools is College Tools. It's collegetools.io. I am unfortunately a subscriber to College Tools now because I've been playing with it, but it is an extraordinarily easy way to cheat. So you install a Chrome plugin and you go on to a test on Blackboard, Canvas, Desire to Learn, Moodle, the McGraw-Hill LMS site. And all you need to do is select text, right-click, and then it will answer it for you, right? Or if it's not accessible, you can scan, you can put your cursor over the image. It doesn't guarantee that it will be able to read it, but in my experiments, I've answered about 30 questions on this on different websites, and it's worked on them all with all these questions. So, I mean, what it effectively does is it relegates objective testing on a machine basically worthless. And that's not true. It's just not worthwhile as a summative assessment, right, in this arena. And I just think about, you know, I'm sure that there are, well, I know for a fact that there are rules in place for computer-based testing for standardized tests. But coming soon to an article near you, I would imagine, is a notion that, you know, students had a plugin that allowed them to, you know, basically cheat on the tests.
And unfortunately, lockdown scenarios like the Chromebook already allows for that may become much more of the experience, whether it's not, here's your machine to create and share. No, here's your lockdown, you know, testing browser that we're going to try to prohibit you from, you know, being able to do anything like use college tools.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, so that's my crazy exploration.
Okay, here's my quick one. Bard helped me not solve, but get a lot further along in a really sort of pernicious, how do you say that, issue. I've had just my web servers having trouble for months. And before I deleted a bunch of new emails that I had from my web server saying, hey, that such and such service went down and whatever, I asked Bard to do, which bard.google.com, which is Google's AI, to do some analysis of this. And what I learned is that Bard, unlike ChatGPT or Claude, can parse and analyze a shared Google Doc. So in addition to analyzing my email in my Gmail account, I was able to ask it what server logs would also share more about this. I was able to paste in that link. It could parse and analyze the entire server log. Bottom line, it was able to help me figure out which one of my 30-something domains was having this issue. I had a cron job, which is a PHP script that runs that I didn't put in, that a bad actor had put into my website. And so I changed passwords on this account, deleted the cron job. There was a file that was executing from the public HTML directory of this server. And I got that deleted. And so anyway, I still have issues. It's not like, hey, it's all perfect. But wow, this was like an incredible IT assistant that did far more than my, you know, interactions with, unfortunately, I think the entry level help desk people of my web host. And it was super cool. And it started with Bard because Bard has access to my Gmail and Bard can do things that, at least from what I found, Anthropic's Claude.ai and ChatGPT can't do. And so were you aware of that you can put in a shared drive file and have, however big it is, have Bard parse and analyze it?
No. I do that with Notebook LM from Google, okay. But I didn't realize that Bard will do a Google Doc now. That's unbelievably cool.
And yeah, from in addition to log files, just like data analysis, right? And so I'm hoping to get into some more of that and data analysis and visualization and stuff like that. So experiments. Okay. We are above the top of the hour. So imagine that, Dr. Neifer. And I think we only covered half of 1% of the AI articles.
Unbelievable. Well, Dr. Fryer, tell us about your geek of the week.
Okay. I just have one. It's my media literacy roundup. I decided to start using my Substack for something that maybe people would want to read a little bit more than what I've done before. And I just wrote really inconsistently. So I'm trying for Sunday. This week I did Monday. It's just a media literacy roundup, some notable things. You can kind of think of it as a geek of the week with like seven different things. But I talked about some of the geeks of the week, like the visualizing our Mars colony. I wrote a post a while back about how I've been using Claude AI to summarize book chapters for the book that we're doing a study on in our Sunday school class. My favorite Mastodon app, Mammoth, sketchnoting units, other stuff. But anyway, that's fun. And Ryan Collins, who's out of Columbus, Ohio, I was inspired by him. He's always been a great ed tech sharer. And Mr. Collins has got a fantastic YouTube site. And then I was noticing how, you know, he's just sharing some good Google tips and other things like that on his Substack. And I thought, hey, I think I'm going to do that too. So that's now part of my plan to do on a weekly basis. You can find that at Substack. Look for W. Fryer or go to my regular after page.
And this is pretty nerdy too, but I have rediscovered NFT tags. And I played around with these a lot on Android, but especially in the early days of the pandemic and kind of it just didn't do much for me. And so I didn't realize that going back to iPhone 6, that there is an NFT reader in there that you can access. And I remember in the early days, it was only Apple Pay that used it. You couldn't use it for other reasons. Well, that's changed now. So I went to Amazon. I picked up like 50 little NFC tags for...
Is that like the tile?
Sort of. So 15 bucks, I think I paid for 50 of these. And what you can do is that you can get them to your phone, scans them, and then you can set up little scenarios that it does with. So I'll give you the example of what I've done. I took one of these NFT tags, and I've presented a lot lately. And so I always put on the do not disturb on my Mac before I start. And that does that on my phone and on my watch and on my, all of my, my stuff, right? So, and it syncs over the cloud to do that, which is also super cool. So what I've done is I've taken, one of these tags and I literally, taped it to my presentation mouse. And so when I walk up to do my presentation now, instead of setting it up on there, I just tap the NFT, or the NFT tag with my phone, and then it turns on the do not disturb over across all my devices. Because that's, you know, an advantage of the ecosystem. And I've put in a couple of kind of example, pages. You can kind of see what it does, but the shortcut, page on your iPhone will allow you to essentially set up anything from shortcuts onto an NFT tag. So again, super nerdy, but hey, that's why you're watching this watching this YouTube video or listening to this podcast. But NFT tags work spectacularly on our friends the iPhone.
In the shortcuts app, I haven't even played with that. We have a seventh grader that was showing me the other day how he had connected the shortcuts app in a if this then that sort of way to ChatGPT.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I may do a podcast with him about this, and he's not even in a coding class. I was like, you need to get in a coding class, my friend.
Yeah. I got a class for you. And by the way, if you haven't played with the chat, the verbal chat with ChatGPT, man, it was pretty cool. I drove with it the last couple of days, and so I had my phone plugged in.
You're talking about being able to have an all audio conversation with ChatGPT.
Yeah. And but then
the text of it. The text of it then just goes into a new saved thread.
Right. Yeah. So here's a way I used it last week. I started a conversation with it and on my phone. And this is one of my favorite demos is, hey, ChatGPT, I'm going to ramble for a couple of minutes. Would you turn this into an email draft? Right.
What?
And so, oh, yeah. That's a
great idea.
That's the best.
Well, that's like my lesson plan today. That was like my lesson plan today. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's
but you just dictate it straight into ChatGPT.
Yeah, so so another example is that you can, and I'm going to do this in my car, right? Is that I'm going to take one of these NFT tags, and again, they're like 30 cents a piece. I'm going to tape it to my dashboard, and then if I want to take a memo, I'll just go and tap it to the NFT, it's not NFT, it's an NFC, NFC tag. NFTs are a whole different mess of weird, but yeah. And then I'm gonna ramble for a couple minutes, and you can even just say it super frankly and kind of like a jerk, and then just say, make this email more polite when you rewrite it. And then you're exactly right, Wes, that you then go to ChatGPT at work and it will have the text that you went back and forth with.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are living in the Harry Potter world where we can say things and cast spells and cause things to happen. And, you know, it reminds me that Alan Levine and some others, I think maybe Tony Vincent, you know, had this thing with Keynote and a plugin so that like when you showed a slide, it would auto tweet, that thing in automation. And so, wow. I'm still looking for, and I don't think I'm going to be developing this, but the tool that captures my audio as I'm presenting and sharing a lecture or a lesson and then has, you know, web safe, student safe images that it's going to display in synchronization with what I say. Because that's really what I end up doing a lot for my presentations. Have you already developed this, Jason? Is that
no? I just laugh because of course that's coming, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. Well, maybe we should develop it soon. Did I tell? I won't do it now. But did I tell the story about my text prepper and the JavaScript, CSS, HTML that I have as a web app that I'm going to put on GitHub?
No, that sounds fascinating. Go ahead.
I'll write the blog post and we'll talk about it next time. But yes, it is something that I've been wanting to do, and I spent time with ChatGPT, but I had to sweet talk it. I had to butter it up. It wouldn't do it. It was like, this will require a lot of development and whatever. And I went over and over, and I finally said in all caps, this is why I'm paying you to do this. I'm a middle school teacher and my coding skills aren't very good. And it said, okay. And it gave me all the code. So anyway, I'll tell more about that later.
Yeah. Okay. Well, before we go on with another hour of this, Dr. Fryer, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm kind of all over the place, but if you go to westfryer.com/after, you will find my main channels, which include still Twitter, but also Mastodon, Blue Sky, Threads, LinkedIn, Facebook, those kinds of places. How about you?
I'm still kind of on Twitter, sort of. My blood sugar is still low. Tech Savvy Teach is where you find me. But hey, this isn't about my blood sugar. This is the EdTech Situation Room. We're a once-a-week podcast on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Mountain Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and somewhere in the middle of the night UTC. Hey, we hope you'll join us live sometime because we like having live viewers. You can interact with us via either Facebook or YouTube. If you can't join us live, however, you can go wherever better podcasts are aggregated or our Facebook or YouTube channels to see any of the archive. Or you can go to our website, edtechsr.com, see the links, and also download tiny MP3s if that's the way you roll. Stay safe, stay savvy, and we'll see you next time on the EdTech Situation Room. Good night.
Adios.